And we are on air. It is Monday, March the 11th, and we're here for our Phoenix NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off. Joining me later tonight, in just a few minutes, will be our co-host, Sal Segala. In the meantime, I'll give you the rundown of what our show is going to be about today. We're going to start off with some short track news. Then we'll review the ARCA Menards and ARCA West Series race that took place out of Phoenix Raceway this weekend, and we'll include a brief ARCA East update as well. Next, we'll review the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series races at Phoenix Raceway, and the Truck Series did not race this week, so we'll make sure you know when their next race is as well. Of course, we end our episode with our Hot Topic Sound-Off discussion with the Fan for Racing crew, and we appreciate everybody tuning in today for the show. So I'm going to go ahead and get started with some of the short track news. I'll have to kind of go back and forth here until Sal comes in. But on dirt, the World of Outlaws race was actually rain ruled the weekend because they had to cancel that weekend at Kennedale Speedway Park. They'll be rescheduling that, and you can check that out, the World of Outlaws, to find out when that next race is going to be. Okay, also, Ronnie Adams Memorial, Bobby Pierce took advantage of a flip from leader Kate Dillard to score that $10,000 payday at Boot Hill Speedway. You can read more about that over at Dirt on Dirt. And that was kind of an interesting race that you'll definitely want to check out for sure. Okay, moving on to the next item that we have here. If you want to know more about the Cars Tour race, that is, Carson Quaffle kicked off the season with a win at Southern National Motorsports Park, and Zach Evans writes about that over at Racing America. It was his 10th career Z-Max Cars Tour late model stock car win on Sunday at Southern National Motorsports Park. He's a two-time series champion, and it was a big victory for Carson Quaffle out there for the Cars Tour. Connor Hall came in second, then it was Deke McCaskill, Chase Burrell, and Caden Honeycutt all round out the top five. The next five drivers were Brett Cruz, Minnie Tyrrell, Clay Jones, Trayton Lapovich, and Bobby McCarty. Lane Riggs, by the way, was the 11th driver on that list. So some good information there from the short track and dirt world of racing. There's also some highlights over at Flow Racing. There's highlights of the 2024 series at Georgetown Speedway. They have not only the highlights, but you can watch the entire race if you want. It's all available over at Flow Racing, and you get a full replay. That race was on Sunday. You can look at the highlights. You can look at the feature race. You can check it all out over at Flow Racing. Short Track Scene also has more information about the race, the Cars Tour race that took place this weekend, the one that Carson Quaffle won. And you can definitely learn more about that over at Short Track Scene as well. I'm going to check in. Yeah, Sal is here now, so I'm going to bring him into the queue. Okay, welcome, Sal.
Hi, good evening, everybody. How are you doing?
We're doing great. I've gone through some of the short track information. Do you have anything to add to any short track news this week?
Yeah, we got the Cars Tour West is opening up their season this Saturday night at Kern County Raceway with Kevin Harvick's Kern County Raceway. So we'll have the Cars Tour Pro Late Models, and we got the Cars Tour Legend series, which is new also. That'll be opening Saturday. And then Saturday we had our opening day at Irwindale Speedway. So it was nice to finally get some racing in. Shoot, haven't gotten anything in this year. But Trevor Huddleston won the first Pro Late race, and then we had a new winner in Nash Youngren won the second 30 lapper, which is nice to get a new it's always nice to get a new young driver, you know, see him get his first win in the Pro Late series. So it was exciting for him and his dad and the whole team, all the work they put in the last few years, and to see him finally get his first win was really exciting. It was a pretty good night of racing. You know, safe, and everybody went, got home safe. And other than that, it was looking forward to this weekend to see what this weekend. We got the Rattler also, the UAR.
Yeah.
Last year was the Southern SRO National Rattler. This year it's UARA Rattler. Ricky Brooks.
New branding.
New branding. So Ricky Brooks is behind the brand on that. So they're running that this weekend. So good luck to Jacob Gomes.
Go ahead.
Good luck to Jacob Gomes, who's making the trip out there from Antigua out here. He was last year's SRL Southwest Tour winner. Champion, I mean.
Okay.
So he's going out there to try and see if he can get a chance to put that rattlesnake around his neck.
That's something I don't think I would enjoy.
Nah, I don't. You guys can have that snake thing. I've seen it too much, and I just I don't know how they can. That's not for me.
Yeah, not for me either. But getting back to the racing, they always put on a good show, and it's one of the highlights of racing in the season, and especially when we're kicking off the season for so many of these series. So I'm looking forward to those races, Cal.
Oh yeah, I mean we all are. It's going to be exciting, but like I said, the. Some of the stuff they do back east, you know, you kind of wonder.
Well, it is kind of cool, though, that the Cars Tour is going out west, because this is the first, right? This is going to be the inaugural season for the Cars Tour West.
Yes, and actually, we Kevin Harvick's going to be the Grand Marshal of the event. So he'll be down at Kern this Saturday night
to
oversee the it'll be cool. Then he'll fly out to I think Corcota, I think is where the Cup race is racing this weekend. Then he'll fly out to Texas.
Bristol,
yeah. As soon as he does his duties out here at his speedway. So it's going to be an exciting night.
Well, let's see if he mentions it on the broadcast that he was out there. I hope he does. Who's your favorite
I'm sure he will. It's hard. You know, Derek's going to run a Pro Late. Derek knows the track well. It's a good field of cars. I'd have to put my money on Derek Thorne to win. Sean Hingorani will be out there, and there'll be some other. Lenny White will be out there. Lenny White will be tough to beat too. But you almost have to put your money on Derek, and he's prepping his own car out there. So it's going to be interesting because usually has Mike Keene with them, but Mike Keene will be with Jacob in Alabama for the Rattlers. So. Derek won't have Mike Keene with him this weekend. So it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how well he does, you know, without Mike Keene.
Well, we always have to put our vote out for Derek Thorne anytime he's in a race. He's a force to be reckoned with, so it probably won't be any different. He's going to be racing that Cars Tour, huh? I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to him some more. I think he's going to do the full series.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It sounds like El Bandito Tequila, who sponsored him at the Derby, is also, it sounds like they're going to sponsor him, you know, for the full race even.
That sounds pretty cool. Also, I saw there was a story over on SRL Southwest Tour sites. John Moore reunites with his son and former team in the SRL Wild West opener. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, you know, that just came out yesterday. I got the first release, and I haven't had a chance to talk to John. I called him today, but John was at work. And supposedly John was done racing last year because Derek was the one that was doing the setups for him. He was racing for Derek Thorne Racing last year.
Mm-hmm.
And after the season, he had said that was it. You know, he wasn't going to, you know, he was going to retire from the SRL, and he was just going to run a pro late over at All America Speedway. And then now this press release came out from Kevin Peters. And I talked to Kevin, but Kevin ain't really going to give too much information. That's not how Kevin is. So I figure I'll have to get a hold of John and find out, because he went back with Mike Nake, Flower Racing, which used to race with them before. And I was kind of curious why he's not back with Derek Thorne Racing when they finished second. He had his best season ever in the SRL Southwest Tour, you know, with Derek Thorne Racing. But there's got to be a lot more that goes to behind the scenes that went on with the story. I don't know if Derek could give him all the time that he needed, you know, for the to set up this prolate for All American Speedway, along with SRL Tour. I'm not sure exactly what's going on. I'll talk to Derek this Saturday and find out what happened.
Okay, good. That sounds good. The last story that I want to touch on here is announced that the Cars Tour late model stock car standout Brennan Butterbean Queen is going to make his NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series debut out at North Wilkesboro Speedway behind the wheel of the number one Toyota Tundra TRD Pro, and that's for Tricon Garage. So it's really cool. I like seeing these crossovers when these guys from the local area take part in some of these NASCAR races. So this is one for us to look forward to. Now.
Yeah, it is. And actually, if everybody knows that Tricon Garage is actually David Gilliland Racing.
And John Gray, right?
Yeah, and John Gray. So they renamed it from DGR to Tricon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing that in May at North Wilkesboro with Brendan Queen. And I think that pretty much concludes our short track news. We've got notes for you over on the Teams app for the ARCA Menards Series post-race notes for the General Tire 150. So William Sawalich scored his fifth career ARCA Menards Series victory and his second consecutive victory on Friday night in the General Tire 150. That was the combination race with the ARCA Menards Series West as well as the ARCA Menards Series. Sawalich is not eligible to race in the season opener at Daytona because of the age restrictions. He closed the 23 season in the ARCA Menards Series finale at Toledo Speedway and the ARCA Menards Series West finale at Phoenix. and he earned the general tire pole qualifying and led a race high 66 laps to win the race. It was shortened by rain, but it was really cool to see William Sawalich kind of pick up where he left off. He was the East champion last year, so he's picking up right where he left off.
It's neat. It was too bad it was rain shortened, but you know, at least they were able to get most of it. And then with that, then you got a Greg Van Alst leads the Arca Menards Series Championship standings after two races with a 5-point advantage over Christian Rose, who was sitting in second.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like seeing that. I'm hoping he can maintain that throughout the year. It'll be fun to see if he's able to do that. Gio Ruggiero finished second in the Arca Menards Series debut. He was driving for Venturini Motorsports. Ruggiero, who won the ASA CRA Super Series and the ASA Southern Super Series Super Late Model Championships last year, led 49 laps and was the only driver other than the race winner, William Sawalich, to lead laps. So that was a really good outing for Gio Ruggiero.
Yeah, it was for him to come all the way from back east to run the West. And they had 46 cars, I think, in the field this year, which is the biggest they've had, gosh, probably in I don't know how many years it's been, but I mean they had six cars. I think six cars had to end up going home that, you know, that didn't qualify high enough. And then after that, you go to Grant Infinger, who finished third, making his first start for team owner Joe Ferre's SPS Motorsports team. It was Enfinger's 51st career top five finish at 99 career Arca Menards Series starts. And Joe Ferre also ran his car as a team owner.
Oh.
Yeah, so him and Grant Enfinger ended up to be teammates. And Joe ran this race only because, you know, he hadn't ran Phoenix in so long. And so he's actually Joe Ferre is the one that put the money up last year. SPS Motorsports, he's the one that put the money up last year for the SRL Southwest Tour Pro Late Models. He's the one that put the prize fund up. His company was one that put all the money up last year for the wins and all the championship money. So he's based out of Las Vegas, so he does a lot. He's the one that's basically got the Bullring back up and running again with TJ out there. So Joe's always been involved in racing, but he's one that's headstoning the effort out there at the Bullring to keep the Bullring open in Las Vegas.
No, that's good. I'm disappointed that ARCA is not going to be racing there this year. But let's move on. Connor Mosack drove the Pinnacle Racing Group Chevrolet. They finished in fourth place in his first series start since winning at Kansas Speedway just last year. So a good run for Connor Mosack as well.
And then the reigning Arca Menards Series West champion, Sean Hingorani, made his first start for Hattori Racing Enterprises. He finished fifth. After starting second, Hingorani is scheduled to make 16 starts across the Arca Menards Series platform with Hattori Racing throughout 2024.
And Isabella Robusto, she did quite well. She made her Arca Menards Series platform debut and raced her way as high as third position in the first half of the race. Then she dropped a couple of positions after lap 75 break, but she was in position to challenge for a top five when lightning brought the race to a stop and then heavy rain brought the race to an early end. Robusto was joined in the top 10 by her Venturini Motorsports teammate, Tony Breidinger, who finished in ninth place. But I was impressed with Isabella Robusto. I thought she did a really good job in that race, and it was a good top 10 finish for Tony Breidinger with the big field that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, there was a lot of people that were impressed with
Isabella.
Yeah, with Isabella and her effort out there.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was fun to watch.
And then Jack Wood finished seventh in the Bill McAnally Racing number 16 Chevrolet, the highest finishing full-time Arca Menards Series West driver. Wood, the de facto West Points leader, has a four-point advantage over the next highest full-time West finisher, defending race winner, Tyler Reif, who finished 11th.
Yeah,
Jack Wood took on the full-time ride this year with Bill McAnally in the 16 after stepping back from the truck series that he ran last year full-time.
Yeah, that's really good to see. I think he could do pretty well, I think, with Bill McAnally. Rev Racing drivers Andreas Perez and LeVar Scott both finished in the top 10. Perez finished in 8th, while Scott had that 10th place finish. So Rev Racing is back and is doing well. So I'm looking forward to both of those drivers this season in that Rev Racing organization.
And then 10 different drivers have scored top 5 finishes, and 20 different drivers have scored top 10 finishes in the first two Arca Menards Series races of 2024. No drivers finished in the top 10 at both Daytona International Speedway and Phoenix Raceway so far this year.
Wow, that's an interesting stat. But it sounds like a lot of people have been up there. They just didn't do it in both races. But they're both two very different tracks, too. There were 4 lead changes among 2 drivers. The race was slowed by caution 6 times. That was for a total of 37 laps. The race was shortened by 35 laps to 115 of the scheduled 150 because of the lightning in the area. And then they had that pop-up rain shower that brought it to an end. But unfortunate, but for the safety of the fans, I think it was the right thing to do.
And then the next race for the Arca Menards Series is the General Tire 200 at Talladega Super Speedway. This race will be televised live on Fox Sports 1 at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time and will be broadcast on select affiliates of the MRN Radio Network nationwide.
Okay, now that's the next Arca Menards Series race. The next race for the Arca Menards Series West is going to be the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame 150 presented by Napa Auto Parts. That will be on March the 30th. They don't have all the details up yet, but we will be previewing that race. Well, they do have some details here. That will be at Irwindale Speedway on March 30th. It's a half-mile paved oval out in Irwindale, California. The start time is 7:05 p.m. Pacific time, 10:05 p.m. Eastern time. They'll race 150 laps to cover a distance of 75 miles. There will be a live stream of the race on Flow Racing, and radio coverage will be available over at arcaracing.com. So, again, we'll preview that race the Thursday before, but I wanted to let everybody know when that next race is. The Arca East still hasn't opened up their season yet, but they will be doing that on March 23rd, Sal, the Pensacola 150 at Five Flags Speedway, and that is coming up again on March the 23rd, Pensacola is a half-mile paved oval in Pensacola, Florida. They'll start around 7:35 p.m. Central Time, 8:35 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll race 150 laps to cover a distance of 75 miles. And again, it will be available for live streaming on Flow Racing, and it will be they'll have the radio coverage on at arcaracing.com. So let's cover the standings for the Arca West and the Arca East. The Arca West, I know it's just the one race that they have in, but I think it's worth going ahead and covering the top 5 drivers at least for that Arca West.
Okay, let me see what they have here. You know what?
That's 23. Click on next year. Now you'll see the 24.
Okay, I'm looking at standings.
Yeah, did you click on the link for next year? Because I've got it. The first one that comes up is the 23 standings. But if you click on the link that says next year, it'll take you to the 24. I can go ahead and cover it.
Where's it? But I want to see it too. So where's the next year at? Where's the link?
Okay, let me go back.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Right there. I see it. It's real
okay.
Small. You can't even see it. Yeah, I see it. Okay, so basically, it's just going to be whatever the finishing order of the race of the ARCA West race was. That's going to be the point.
Yeah, but they didn't necessarily finish in first place or second place. They finished according to the ARCA West drivers.
No, that's what I'm saying. So the way they did the standings was however they finished in Phoenix. Those are the standings.
Right.
So Wallach leads the standings right now, which he'll be leading it after Urendale because he won't come to Urendale. Gio Ruggiero won't come to Urendale. He's in second. Grant Enfinger won't come to Urendale. He's in third. Connor Mozak won't come to Urendale. He's in fourth. Sean Hingarani will be at Urendale. Isabella Robusto will be at Urendale. She's in sixth. Jack Wood will be at Urendale. He's in seventh. Andres Perez won't be at Urendale. Tony Breidinger won't be at Urendale. And LeVar Scott is, I think, rounds out the top ten. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, LeVar Scott's the last one. Other than that, you can go down to Tyler Reif. Yeah, Tyler Reif, Tanner Reif, Trevor Huddleston, Kyle Keller, Todd Sousa, Takuma Koga, and Nick Ioannidis, and Johnny Borderman, the third, will all be at Urendale. Cody Kimmelly, he's not too sure. He ran Cody Kimmelly, who didn't get a lap in, but he was there Saturday. He raced Friday night in the ARCA, then he went Saturday night to Urendale to race the Pro League. But his dad's not sure if he's gonna continue to run the ARCA series, if he's just gonna keep him in the Pro League.
Okay.
He plays baseball.
We're gonna run
too.
Into. Yeah. Now, when we do the points for the ARCA Menard series, it's going to be a little confusing too, because some of these people have one race under their belt. Some of them have two races under their belt, and as the season goes on, a lot of this will work itself out. But let's go ahead and cover the points for the ARCA Menard series as well. They have two races in the books. Some drivers raced those, some didn't.
Okay. Figures my.
I've got it up. If you want me to cover it?
It's all jacked up. Okay, here we go. Okay, we got Gus Dean. Who's leading the points, and then Thomas
Annunziata.
There you go. Yeah, that guy is second. And then you got Greg Van Alstyne third, Christian Rosen fourth, Tim Richmond in fifth, Jason Kitzmiller's in sixth, Gil Linstar seventh, Alex Club is in eighth, Amber Balkin in ninth, and Jake Finch rounds out the top ten.
Yeah, and only four of those drivers have driven in both races, so that makes it kind of interesting. But as the season goes on, we're going to see that change up a little bit. But I'm kind of interesting to see how it plays out in the beginning of the season.
To see all these other drivers only have one race in, and then you go down to 25th, and Marco Andretti has two races in, and he's in 25th in points.
He's just getting his feet wet, though, too. in the Arkham Menard series. We'll have to see how the season continues to go for him. Okay, I'm going to move over. Go ahead.
But, I'm not going to say anything more about Margot and Gritty.
Okay. I will just mention the truck series did not race at Phoenix, but they will be racing the WeatherGuard truck race at Bristol Motor Speedway this coming weekend. That race will be Saturday, March 16th, and it will start sometime around 8 p.m. Eastern time. So watch for us. We'll preview that race this Thursday. But I just want to mention they did not race this past weekend. We're going to focus on the Xfinity Series first. They did race this weekend, and that was the call811.com every time 200 out at Phoenix Raceway. Chandler Smith won that race. Jason Allgaier, though, wrecked from the lead late in the race. So with that win, Chandler Smith had a message for his Joe Gibbs Racing team after taking the checkered flag in overtime in Saturday's race. We'll take him when we can get him, Smith radioed before celebrating his second career victory with a burnout near the start-finish line. For the first time with Joe Gibbs Racing's number 81, Chandler Smith won the race in the Xfinity Series at Phoenix for his second career victory. He led a race-high 88 laps, including every lap in the opening stage, on his way to his win. He capitalized on the number 7 Justin Allgaier glowing a left rear tire from the lead, which is 5 laps left, and he slammed that outside wall. Justin Allgaier was credited with a 29th place result after that, which was disappointing, I'm sure. Jesse Love continues to impress. He edged out the number 18 of Sheldon Creed at the line for second place by 0.019 seconds. Austin Hill earned his fourth top five finish of the season in fourth place, while the pole sitter Cole Custer rounded out the top five. Shane Van Gisbergen, he did well. He scored his second top 10 of the season, placing sixth. Brandon Jones came in ninth. Parker Kligerman, Sammy Smith, Anthony Alfredo rounds out the top 10. There were 7 lead changes among 4 drivers, 6 cautions for 43 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 92.516 miles per hour. So the highest finishing rookie was Jesse Love, who came in second place. What are your thoughts about those top 10 drivers, Sal?
Yeah, I felt bad for, Allgaier, to get that flat when he did. He definitely was going to win the race, of course, everybody talked about the wreck, with Chandler, taking out his own teammate, I don't know, when are these guys going to learn, they had the same thing happen in Supercross too with a few of the young riders, but Jesse Love continues to impress, finished second, mm-hmm. Like you said, highest finishing rookie. He's got a race win coming up here pretty quick. Sheldon Creed, finished third. Yeah, Sheldon Creed, is looking good. Of course, Austin Hill is in, he's just really putting the hurt on this series. But, you had to feel bad for Riley Herbstson, who got caught up in that wreck. Riley Herbst had a good run going. He ended up finishing 24th. But, look at Brandon Jones, with the 7th place finish. SVG, like you said, finished 6th, He said he's having a lot of fun. He can't wait to get out to a road course, so he can really, show his skills. But, you still got Cole Custer, who's good at the road courses too. So, and usually, we see a couple of cup drivers come down. So it's going to be exciting. But, Cole, getting that 5th place finish, up and down day for Cole Custer. And other than that, you know, congratulations to Chandler Smith on the win. And, you know, I guess, you know, you get them any way you can get them.
That's right. I guess that's the case. Also, there were some people who had some mechanical issues or accidents that took them out of the race early. We'll start with Patrick Emmerling. He was out on lap 5 due to an accident. Suspension issues for Ryan Vargas took him out of the race on lap 17. On lap 143, three drivers were taken out of the race. Sam Mayer, Parker Retzlaff, and Jeb Burton all out on that lap. A couple more drivers were out on lap 146. That was John Hunter Nemechek and Haley Deegan. And then on lap 154, Eric Almirola was out because of an accident. Frankie Muniz actually had a vibration that took him out of the race on lap 156. And then on lap 195, that's when Justin Allgaier, so close to the finish of the race, he was taken out with that flat tire. So that took him out of the race. There were several drivers who finished the race, but finished a lap or more down. Only 17 drivers finished all 205 laps of the race. So just to give you a perspective there. But this was a close one. And Chandler Smith was the one who finished out on top. He actually won the first stage, and then Cole Custer won the second stage. Any other thoughts there? So.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, you basically got, you know, picked it off in a, you know, in a nutshell. You know, Shane Van Gisbergen, you know, continues to impress, you know.
I think so.
You know, especially coming from, you know, from road racing. So it's going to be interesting to see how he finishes out the season. You know, he's got some, you know, he still has another super speedway race coming up, you know, and then, of course, you know, then he's got all the short tracks. But, you know, just see how he's going to be able to how he's going to be able to adjust, you know, week in and week out, you know, to the
Now, I do have the audio here from Chandler Smith, who is the race winner. It's only three and a half minutes. You want to listen to it, and then we'll comment?
Yeah, we go and listen to it.
Okay, let's hear what Chandler had to say after the race.
Now joined by tonight's race winner, driver of the number 81 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota, Chandler Smith. We will get right to questions, so if you have a question for Chandler, please raise your hand. We'll start over here with Jonathan.
Got to be able to race and experts. You know, you've been close multiple times already this season. How big is it to finally break through and get this win?
Yeah, no, it's definitely good. First win with Joe Gibbs Racing, first win back with Toyota Racing after you know, my little departure last year. So happy to be back with Joe Gibbs, or happy to be back with Toyota Racing, be with Joe Gibbs Racing, and looking to rack up more.
We will come right up here.
Dylan Smith, Cooper Insulation Radio On.com. Your second practice, your second qualifying, looked like you were going to finish second in the race. You know, what was your thought process, you know, late in the going until Justin obviously had that unfortunate blown tire?
Yeah, I definitely hate it for those guys. I've been in a position like that, and it's mentally hard on the driver. You have a good car, you drive away from, I mean, we were dominating a little bit there for a bit, so to be as good as he was there at the end and something like that happened, it's heartbreaking, so I hate it for those guys, but it just wasn't meant to be for him, and it's easy for me to say that sitting up here with the trophy going home with me tonight, but yeah, no, definitely, I was chipping away, trying to salvage a decent day. P2 wouldn't have been bad either, but come on, we can get them.
We'll go to Bob Hawkins and then right over here.
Not answering questions from you, Bob.
Well, I have two that you can choose not to answer. Well, first is just how important is it to get – how was it important to get a win this early coming back to Toyota and making this move to Gibbs?
Yes, of course, just because of the simple fact of I'm here to win. I'm in Joe Gibbs Racing Equipment. Toyota is back to supporting me fully like they did before I went to college racing and be with Chevy. I've got everything at my disposal to win every single weekend. And I've been upset about – I was telling Cole Custer, I was like, dude, I'm upset. I keep qualifying second. And then having these – I mean, they're good finishes, but we haven't won yet. So those are upsetting, but it's a good thing to be upset about, right? Just we need to manage expectations though, and keep on chipping away and keep this momentum on our side.
And John Hunter said he hadn't – when we talked to him, that he hadn't seen a replay, and, you know, he's sure you guys will talk and kind of indicate it's – Phoenix restart. I'm curious what happened. What did you see from your end, and did you feel like it was Phoenix or just racing?
Yeah, it was definitely Phoenix. We'll talk about it Monday for sure, but it was just typical Phoenix restarts. Everybody searching for real estate, and everybody runs out of it, and if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's just – I hate it for those guys for sure, though.
All right, go ahead. Hi, Michaela Landon from the Lumberjack. So after Justin Allgaier crashed, how did your strategy change moving forward into overtime?
Well, first off, I asked my crew chief, Jeff Mendering, Jabbo, how much better we were to all the guys out back, just so I kind of knew how we were stacking up compared to the people out back, if they were coming, if they were better than us at that point of the race, or if we were still driving away. And he said we were better. I don't know if we were or not. He's a little turd sometimes, and he'll shoot me straight when he says he wants to. But anyways, so just make sure that have a solid restart. Don't spin the tires. Get through turns one and two solid, and hit your marks after that.
Do we have any additional questions? All right, Chandler, congratulations, and thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Okay, well, he gave his perspective on it, Sal. He's been on the losing side of some of those. He just happened to be on the top side this time.
Yeah, you know, that's typical Chandler, you know. He's been more on the dirty side. I'm just going to put out there, I'm more on the dirty side of racing than what he's been on the good side, on the clean side of winning. So, I mean,
well, we know that has a way of catching up with you over time, though.
Oh, yeah, it does. You know, I mean, you know, that's how Joe Gibbs runs his program. I mean, look what he's done with Denny and Kyle Busch and everyone else that went through his program. You know, he claims, you know, this, it doesn't matter. Anyways, it was a good interview.
Okay.
You know, you know, Joe Gibbs will be Joe Gibbs racing. You know, there's, you know, Joe just wants to win at any cost. You know what? He's going to throw, you know, whatever he has to, you know, drivers out there, you know, do what he has to do. I mean, you know.
Well, let's go ahead and cover the points now.
Yeah, so then the points you got Chandler Smith leading the points, Austin Hill right there in second. You know, and they're only 1 point away from each other. Austin with his two wins, Chandler with the one win. Then you got Cole Custer sitting in third. Riley Herbst, who wasn't really hurt that bad by the wreck, sitting in fourth. And then Jesse Love, man, he's sitting in a strong fifth spot right there as the highest rookie. And then from there, then we go down to Sheldon Creed. That rounds out the top six. And then from there, then we go down to A.J. Allmendinger, Justin Allgaier, Bradley Jones, who's still in there in the hunt, Sammy Smith, Parker Klingerman, Anthony Alfredo, and Ryan Seager, only 2 points away from the bubble. But then you look at the other rookie, Shane Van Gisbergen, and man, he's right there fighting for that other spot. So obviously,
I think he's going to do well at Circuit of the Americas.
Oh yeah, he's a shoo-in to win that. If he doesn't win that, you know, he might as well just quit racing Xfinity.
I think he's going to be in the playoffs.
You know, because he's going to win. He's going to win that race. If not, it's going to be Cole Custer, one of the two. Because Cole's is going to be the other. But then I'm curious what Cup drivers are going to come over and race, to get ready for that race. But, it's going to be interesting. But he's holding his own, you know, on the Daytona, Atlanta, then Phoenix and you know, and all these tracks that they've hit so far. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, and Vegas and then Phoenix, you know, so, I mean, four races in, and he's, you know.
Yep, he's doing well.
He's doing well, so.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting to see how he ends up at the end of the season.
Yes, it is. I definitely think he's going to be in the playoffs. Let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series race. They raced the Shriners Children's 500 on Sunday. Christopher Bell won the race, his first win of the year, in the first at Phoenix, the seventh of his career. Chris Buescher came in second, followed by Ty Gibbs, Brad Keselowski, Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, Martin Truex Jr., Michael McDowell, Chase Briscoe, and Tyler Reddick. The pole winner, Denny Hamlin, led just 13 laps on the day, finishing 11th. He was battling Reddick for the lead on lap 214 when he spun and brought out a caution. That resulted in a mix of pit strategies, and he could never get back to the front. Bell inherited the lead with 41 laps remaining when Truex had to pit for tires after he did not pit under that final caution. Bell pulled away from the field to win by more than 5 seconds. That was just incredible to watch. Stage one was won by Tyler Reddick. Stage two was won by Christopher Bell. There were 10 lead changes among six drivers and six cautions for 40 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 103.568 miles per hour. The highest finishing rookie of this race was Carson Hosepar, who finished in 15th place. Your thoughts about the top 10 drivers?
Yeah, you know, congratulations on Chris Bell, you know, getting the win. So, you know, Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, goes back to back, you know, on the Xfinity win with Chandler, then, you know, with the Cup win with Christopher Bell.
Yep.
And
ARCA race was won by William Sawalich in a Toyota, too.
Yeah, in a Toyota. But, you know, and, it, you know, more Christopher Bell, you know, they were talking last year that Christopher Bell is basically going to be the driver to watch. He was going to be the next, you know, basically the next premier Joe Gibbs Racing driver, you know, and everyone was kind of talking about, well, what about Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex? But media members were saying that, you know, that Christopher Bell showed a lot more promise. You know, we'll probably get a championship before Denny Hamlin gets one. You know, and he's already, you know, he's, you know, got a good start to the season out there. I say the driver you really got to watch this year is Ty Gibbs. He's bound to get a win. I mean, he has just been strong every week. There's just always, whether it's a pit stop or something goes wrong. But I mean, Ty Gibbs is always running up there up front, you know, and he's been strong. You know, it's good to see Brad Keselowski, you know, start off with another good season, you know, with the, you know, fourth place finish, you know, here at here at Phoenix. And then, you know, of course, Ross Chastain in the number one, and you know, Daniel Suarez, you know, get that 13th at, you know, after getting the win, you know, in Vegas, you know, and, you know, see him get the, you know, pick up a 13th place finish. So, you know, for, you know, for Trackhouse Racing, you know, then of course, you know, was all high on, Noah Gregson, you know, getting another, wasn't a top 10, you know, but, you know, getting a 12th place finish, you know, a lot better, you know, than the way to start off the season. So, all in all, you know what, it's going to be another tough season for these drivers. Chris Bell's already in the playoffs, you know, so now he can, not that he's going to sit back, you know, and just say, I'm in, you know,
no.
Just, you know, it's all that, you know, but I mean, you know, he'll work on some, that team will definitely work on some, you know, some strategies, you know, going into, you know, so when they get into the playoffs, he can have a lot better showing. But I mean, then Chris Buescher finishing, you know, second, you know, that was a big accomplishment for that team. You know, congrats to all the drivers.
I thought one of the big stories, too, was that, you know, Chevrolet dominated the first three races of the season. No other manufacturer had won. And then you come to Phoenix, and Toyota dominated. They were very strong at Phoenix. But I also thought that we saw some lights at the end of the tunnel for RFK Racing, with Chris Buescher getting that second place and with Brad Keselowski getting the fourth place, and also for Stewart Haas Racing. Both of those are Ford teams. And you had Trisco with that ninth place finish and Noah Gregson with the 12th place finish. I think they might be seeing some light at the end of their tunnel, at least on the short tracks, with the finishes that those guys had. And Michael McDowell, I think, drives the Ford as well. So Ford was pretty strong in this race as well, but Toyota got the win. So Chevy was pretty much shut out.
Yeah, they were able to shut the Chevy drivers out this week. But yeah, that's true. You know, and of course, everybody's wondering where's Tony Stewart. Well, Tony Stewart was out making his NHRA Top Fuel debut this past weekend. You know, so he wasn't with the team. I still say you can't judge a season by the first four races, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
You judge it by the whole season. You know, a lot of teams get a good start, you know, then as the season goes on, they fade, or you get the teams that don't really click, you know, then they click, you know, in the middle of the season. But, Joe Gibbs is right on point.
At least on the short track.
Yeah. We'll see what happens when the road courses come up and the intermediate tracks, you know, we start getting to those, you know, it's going to be exciting times for those guys.
Yep. Well, there weren't too many accidents in this race, or drivers taken out by accident. And I don't see any mechanical issues here, but Austin Cindric, he was caught up early in a wreck on lap six, took him out of the race. Derek Krause, wow. that was quite a spin for Derek Krause. And he was taken out on lap 203, but he took Jerry Logano with him. And then on lap 204, Corey LaJoy was taken out by an accident as well. So those five drivers, or four drivers, I guess it is, all taken out by accidents, no mechanical issues here in the Cup Series. So I know our hot topic is, we have a hot topic on tap for tonight about whether or not the package worked for this weekend. Do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, Sharon, I didn't get a chance to see the race this weekend. I was we had Irwindale Saturday, and then Sunday we had a day for an old friend from high school. You know, she had a milestone birthday this weekend. So, you know, so six of us got together. You know, I went and spent the day with her. You know, took her and her husband
nice.
To lunch. You know, and yeah, so it was neat. You know, I was going to watch the race today, you know, because I go to work tonight, but I'm still trying to get my office together, and so I had to get some work on the ceiling. And then today was my paint day. I was going to put the paint day out till tomorrow, but I thought, you know, I'd rather get my paint day in today, and because tomorrow my boss wants me to do an extra job in the morning for him. So when I get home, I have to go do one other job, and then I'll come home and get all my sleep in. So I thought I'd rather get my paint in and give it a chance, get everything a chance to dry, and then I'll go, you know, I'll go take care of what my boss needs done. You know, and because then I got Kern this Saturday.
Yeah, you're going to go to Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. I love that.
Yeah, Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's going to be fun. I'm envious of you being there. I think that's going to be a fun race. I love that it's the inaugural Cars Tour race out there, and that Derek Thorne's going to be running in it. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting times out there, I'll tell you that.
I would agree with you. And I can't wait to see what the results are. I know you're trying to get Ricky Brooks on the show with us. And I know Derek's real busy, but I'd love to have him back too.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Derek this Saturday. I think this year he'll be willing to do a lot more, interviews and stuff. I know last year he was really super busy, but this year, you know, he put one of his press releases, if you need anything, you know, here's my media contact. So I see him Saturday. I'm just going to tell him, hey, dude, I'm going to take you up on your media offer.
Well, let me know as soon as you can. I know we've only got two races next week, so we can probably do two interviews. But Jay contacted me tonight, too. He may have somebody for the 9 o'clock slot. So just kind of keep that in mind.
Okay. And then are we going to do the points?
Oh, yeah. Let's do the points real quick. I almost forgot about the points.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so then anyways, leading the driver points so far in four events is Ryan Blaney in first, Kyle Larson in second. Kyle's already punched his ticket into the playoffs with Martin Truex third. William Byron in fourth, who is also set for the playoffs. Fifth is Tyler Reddick. Sixth is Ty Gibbs, was no longer a rookie, so we don't see that little rookie hashtag next to his name. Yeah, then seventh is Ross Chastain, and Danny Hamlin rounds off the top eight. And then from there, then we go to Chase Elliott in ninth, Daniel Suarez at 10th, who also has a win, Kyle Busch at 11th, Chris Bell, who just picked up his win, number 12, 13th is Alex Bowman, 14th is Bubba Wallace, 15th is Austin Cindric, 16th is Chris Buescher, and right below that is 17 and 18 is Michael McDowell and Eric Jones, who are both tied at 84 points, and they're 2 points back from Chris Buescher with the who's on the bubble right now. So those are top 16 for the playoffs.
Four different drivers already qualified. I think that's pretty cool. How long will they go on the streak like that? Four races, four drivers.
I think they're
going to
go pretty far.
I think so, too.
I think they're going to go pretty far. I think they're going to go pretty far before we finally get a repeat driver.
Yep, I do, too. I haven't really sat down and thought about when I think there might be a repeat driver, but I'm wondering, let's see, Kyle Larson's the winner, William Byron, Daniel Suarez, and Christopher Bell. If I had to make a guess over who would be your guess to be the first repeat winner of those four?
I would probably say Kyle Larson.
I'm kind of toying between Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell.
Yeah.
It's definitely Kyle Larson is up there, I think. I think he'd probably be the first pick of most people. He's got the most diversity, I think, of tracks that he could win on.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
he'd definitely be my pick. Yeah. I hope you have a good time out at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this weekend. Say hi to Derek Thorne for me. And I can't wait to hear back from you.
Yeah. So, next week, we'll talk to everybody. You guys all have a good show. Have a good, safe weekend. And we'll talk to you next weekend.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Sal.
Okay. All right. Okay. Goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. It's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Soundup. And we're ready to kind of move into that realm. I think we have Andy Lasky. Is that you?
That is me. Good evening.
Welcome to the show, Andy. So far, it's just me and you. I know Jay's planning to be here. And I don't think we heard from Tommy. I don't know if Tommy's going to be here or not.
I don't know. I'm not sure that I saw. Hopefully, we do hear Jay at some point, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jay's going to come. I talked to him a little bit earlier today. I'm disappointed that Mike's not going to be here. But maybe you can fill in for Mike tonight.
I don't know if I can fill his shoes. I got an idea that it would have been a pretty interesting episode if Mike had been on. So I probably have a bit of a more neutral standpoint on some of these hot topics that we're going to talk about. But nonetheless, there's some fairly big issues coming out of Phoenix this weekend.
Yes, indeed. I tried to get Sal to give me his thoughts about the package and everything, but unfortunately he didn't watch the race, so he wasn't willing to give me any thoughts. But Jay is here now, so welcome to the show, Jay.
Well, thank you, Sharon. I did watch the race, and whether or not, I'm still in to give an opinion on anything at any time.
Well, Andy's neutral, and you've got an opinion on things. So, Andy, let's start with you today with the first hot topic. Lead us off.
All right. The first one on the list that was posted by Mike was that Jordan Bianchi, of course, from The Athletic, predicts that Phoenix will no longer be the championship race for next season.
Okay. Jay, what are your thoughts about that? Do you think this is the last year for Phoenix championship, or are we going to stay there or move on?
I don't know. I know there's a lot of talk about it. We do visit there twice a year. That was something that got talked about a lot when it comes to having the championship race, of picking a track that only has one event per year like we had with Homestead Miami. I think there's something to be said for that. Now, again, we've talked about this several times. There are a limited number of tracks where you can hold the season-ending championship race due to weather and restrictions. So I do think Las Vegas deserves a chance at it. You don't really want to go to a road course or a super speedway or a short track per se. I know Phoenix kind of gets labeled as a short track, runs like a short track anyway. So you're primarily looking at Las Vegas. From what we've seen with NASCAR over the past 5 to 10 years, and more so in the last 5, is they're willing to do things for about 3 years at a time. Talk about the Bristol Dirt, the Indianapolis road course are two that come to mind. So this would be about the time that a change would come when it comes to that. One of the things I know, looking at it, of especially with the new car and everything, as top teams, all teams get a chance to improve on. If your top teams are figuring something out, they're trying to shake it up and bring it back to an even playing field. So there again, it may be time to move on. Whether or not they do it, I haven't heard any indication that would create somebody to make that statement. But Jordan Bianchi is obviously a lot further and deeper involved with NASCAR than I am, so at higher levels. So there may be something to it. I'm not opposed to it. I think that three-year rotation of things can mix things up. What I would say then is, and let's just use Las Vegas as the example, is I hope that they do it, as some fans have suggested, of if they get the championship for that year or three-year deal, that they only then have that one race per year, use that other date to open something else up, such as new tracks, or look at maybe California is available then. I'm drawing a blank. Auto Club Speedway, with whatever they're going to do with that, or something else when they move it again, or if they move it again. Vegas gets two dates back, but whatever track they move it to only gets one. So I think that's something that should tie in, because I kind of like that only once a year visit for the championship.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Jay. I like the once a year track too. Homestead was like that. We only went to Homestead one time a year. It gave some unpredictability, even though it was a 1.5 mile track. And I know they get the rap that all 1.5 mile tracks are cookie cutter tracks, but I think there are some differences between the 1.5 mile tracks. And I think Homestead was kind of a nice track to have at the end of the year, a place that nobody had been at all year long, and then make that be the final race for the end of the year. But you're right, too. Jay, that we're so limited in what tracks we can choose to be the season finale because of the weather. A lot of tracks aren't eligible to be a season finale track because the weather has more chance of interfering with that end-of-year championship races. Las Vegas might be an option for that championship race. It's another 1.5-mile track. Depending on what your thoughts are about Las Vegas, it's another 1.5-mile track. Some people like the racing there, some don't. But, again, the options are limited. We know that they don't like the racing at Texas Motor Speedway, and so that probably isn't really a good option. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. This is speculation, but like you say, Jordan Bianche is pretty deep into NASCAR, so if he's saying that it's a possibility, I would take his word for it, that in 2025 is probably a year that we might see a change in where that championship celebration is going to take place. So I guess let the speculation begin on where that might be. But I think it might be time. And here's some reasons why. And I heard them talk about this on SiriusXM. Phoenix is such a unique racetrack when it comes to short track racing. It's not like any other short track that we race at. It's a flat track. It's a one-mile track. And it's on concrete. It's a fast short track, unlike a track like Martinsville, where they're pretty much bumper to bumper and bumping and banging. Phoenix isn't like that. So I do think that the uniqueness of the track, even though they go there twice a year, I think it races differently in the spring than the way it races in the fall. So I don't know how much the spring race is really going to help the drivers when it comes to the fall race at that track. But it might be time to move on. I don't know. NASCAR will make that decision, and we'll have to see if that is indeed what's going to happen. But I know there's going to be a lot of speculation between now and then. What are your thoughts, Andy?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that it's possibly run its course, and maybe it's time for something new. And what that is, I guess, remains to be seen. You know, to your point, it is just speculation at this point, but my personal opinion is it would be nice to see a change. And I think about that from the standpoint of, you know, drivers that work all year, you know, win 5, maybe 7 races and work their way all the way to that final round. And if they, for whatever reason, just, you know, aren't that great at Phoenix, it's like they're never going to have a chance to win a championship. But if you rotate the finale to different types of racetracks, you know, maybe, like Jay said, maybe the new rendition of Auto Club Speedway, or, you know, rotate in Homestead occasionally. And that's not to say we can't go back to Phoenix some point, but if you rotate the finale, it's I think more of a level playing field, if you will, because if you're a driver that's just not great at Phoenix, it's like you never have a chance to win a championship. But if we can rotate it around to various racetracks, it's almost more of a level playing field over time. And I like Jay's point, too, of wherever the finale is, don't race there earlier in the year, you know, because I feel like yesterday, for pretty much the whole field, it was probably a test session, you know, really for the fall race. And obviously, you know, we saw who was really strong and who was really good. But that being said, there's a long time between March and November, and the setups and everything evolved so much that what worked yesterday probably isn't going to work in November. So you can't really say for sure that Christopher Bell or Denny Hamlin and those guys will automatically be the favorites. But Toyota certainly looked like they had a very firm grip on Phoenix yesterday. So If Toyotas can make the Final Four, it's going to be hard to bet against them. But I guess as far as, you know, Phoenix goes, I do think it's run its course. I'm not sure it's the most exciting finale or exciting race. I mean, I've always liked Phoenix typically, but in recent years, it hasn't quite put on the show that you might expect, at least from a season finale standpoint. So at least change it up every couple, 3 years, make it interesting, maybe make it more of a level playing field, and I think that would probably be fair to all the drivers that do get that chance to go for a championship.
Okay, Jay?
Well, since Mike isn't here for me to argue with, I'll argue with myself. Since you two kind of agreed with me on certain things, I will give some counterpoint. Sharon, you kind of hit on one of them, and this goes back to most tracks that aren't in the same short window. They are a little bit different during the spring and the fall, so there is that aspect. You also talk about this year particular, Ford has a new car. Toyota had a different, little bit different body, a few body modifications. So while Toyota specifically had it really figured out this past weekend, we have until November for the other teams to figure out what they're dealing with. As far as the Fords, who actually did, when you look at it, end up with some decent finishes from certain teams, specifically RFK Racing, as well as Penske on half of it with Ryan Blaney, who also won there last fall. So there's that gap of it. You know, the team's got time to figure it out between the two races, if you wanted to argue on that side. There are some aspects to it. It provides some great wide racing, and I know we'll get into that when we talk about the package of what kind of lanes you can run. It doesn't become a one-lane or one-groove track only. Other tracks have a tendency to do that, and since Tommy's not here, I'll represent him. Yeah, Sharon, you mentioned that Texas would be one weather-wise, but the racing there hasn't been real good. Before they were to even think about taking it there, and I'm not as harsh as Tommy and some others, he's not alone in that. I would like to see the racing at Texas improve. Whether they change the track, there's been talk about that or whatever. I would certainly like to see some better racing there before they bring the championship there, if they were to. Honestly, when you talk about a unique track and one-time visit, and I know it's really not possible, we may get lucky, but having it in Indianapolis would be kind of cool. I know the lure of the Brickyard kind of went away. Went to the road course. Now they're going back to the oval with the going back to the oval and it being the Brickyard 400 itself. But that would be track-wise unique to have as a championship, even though it's Indy, which is kind of IndyCar, and NASCAR brought themselves into it. But and then there again, weather. Like I said, it's possible in November at Indiana you could have a good race, kind of like at Atlanta. And I say that from experience. I believe it was either the 96 or 97 championship by Jeff Gordon that I was there. It was cold. There ain't no doubt about it. And I know that's why they had moved away from that one. So Indianapolis would be the same way. You may get lucky and have a good one. And even if you don't get snowed out, it's still going to be cold. So I understand that, but I'm just thinking of it from that unique perspective. That would be kind of cool to close it there. But like I said, that's also IndyCar's kind of home. Daytona is NASCAR's. But there again, do we want to have another one, especially on a super speedway, as the championship? Because that's one where it's such a wild card. We know that anybody that's in the race could win it.
Yeah, that would be interesting to have a season opener at Daytona and end it at Daytona. But you're right, it's such a wild card race. Is that really going to be how we want to determine who the champion is going to be? Because as we know, one wreck could take out half of the field. So what happens if all four drivers get knocked out of the race? That wouldn't be fun. It's hard to really pick another track that might work. The only other one that I think really works and hits all the buttons that we kind of talked about with the a track that they visit only one time in the year is Homestead. Las Vegas they hit twice a year. We don't know about what's going to happen with Auto Club Speedway, if that's going to be a one-time-a-year or two-time-a-year track. So it's really hard to pick any other tracks that might work for the season finale. So I didn't really watch the YouTube video on this, but did they come up with any other tracks that they thought might be potential tracks for that championship race? Or Andy, can you think of any other tracks?
No, I think to your point, you know, Homestead's the other logical one, and maybe that's because we're just used to that, having been there for so many years. But it is a good mile-and-a-half track. The racing is good there. It does put on a good show. But I wouldn't even be opposed to them going to some other venues, you know, particularly places in the southeast or the south or the west that have fairly decent weather in November. I'm just trying to change it up, you know, for every couple, 3 years just to keep it interesting. But I would agree that it really can't be a super speedway or a road course. I don't think that a road course really, although as much as I like road courses, I'm not sure that it's 100% representative of NASCAR racing. So for that to define the finale for a championship, I don't think would be a good idea. And then super speedway racing obviously produces crazy racing and crazy wrecks, but I can only imagine the backlash and outcry from fans and drivers alike if the finale was at a super speedway, because the first time you tear up 20 cars and it involves any of the final four, you know, you'll hear a lot of criticism for that. So I think that'd be a pretty bad idea if they went in that direction, which I don't think they would. So I don't think you'd see them go in that direction. I don't know, but, you know, there's some places that come to mind. I mean, Homestead would be great. We've said that. I think you could even rotate Phoenix in and out of the finale. Vegas, the new auto club would be intriguing, whatever that is, you know, whatever that becomes. It's supposed to be a short track, so that would be pretty cool. You know, and then, you know, thinking of some places in the southeast, it's like, what if they ran like North Wilkesboro or something like that as the finale? You know, instead of it being the all-star race, maybe it's specifically used as a finale, or Martinsville, you know, some of these places like that. I don't know. Or maybe, you know, maybe they, well, never mind. The last one doesn't even make sense. I was going to say Charlotte, but they already run the 600 there. So to run it as a finale probably wouldn't make sense. But, you know, I think it would be cool to see them rotate some of these tracks in and out as the finale, and it would be nice to see them maybe only run that particular track that year as the finale. But I don't know. It's like no matter what you do, it's going to please some people. It's not going to please some others. So I don't really know what the right answer is. But I guess my only hope would be to see some variety and just see some different types of racetracks rotate in and out of the finale.
Okay, well, let that be the final word then. Jay, what's our next hot topic?
Well, as we're talking about Phoenix, and I don't know if this correlated as to why it may move away from there, but they brought the new package there. Thoughts on that were mixed from drivers, from fans. Overall, I didn't see an issue with it. Mike's topic, it says, is it time for NASCAR to accept reality and add horsepower back? I know that tied into it as well. And Sharon and I already talked about a little bit about it, and we got some comments from Mike. All right, multiple comments. Oh, a long one. All right, well, there's the topic. We'll go from there.
Okay, well, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is one of the ones that came to mind as to why I thought that having Mike on the show would have been pretty interesting this evening. But nonetheless, horsepower. I loved it when they ran, you know, remember the old, a couple, 3 years ago, they had the 550 and the 750 package. I was always a fan of when they ran more horsepower. It tended to produce some of the better racing because it meant that with more horsepower, it means you're going faster down the straightaways, which means more off-throttle time in the corners, which, depending on handling, can generate passing. But I've thought about it some more. Even just today, I thought about it some more. And I think I'm not really sure horsepower is the problem, because if you give everybody the same horsepower increase with equal race cars, then everyone's still going the same speed. So I just think that we're in a day and age where the parity's never been closer, right? And everyone tries to compare racing to, like, that of 1990, but the cars were totally different then. There was a lot less downforce. We are in a day and age where downforce has never been greater, engineering has never been greater, and parity's never been better, really. And especially with the new car that was designed to make everyone as equal as possible. Well, it wasn't like that back in, you know, the 1980s and 90s, which is why you probably did have the good racing and the passing that you did, because there was such a disparity between the back half of the field to the front half of the field. So, of course, in those days, it tended to, you know, you would see more passing because you have maybe somebody at the rear of the field, you know, coming back from a penalty or something that had a car that was just way better than everybody else's, and they could slice up through there. But the cars are just way, way closer nowadays. And so I really think that plays into it. And, you know, I just don't know if, you know, no matter what package they try to tweak and put under the cars, if it's really going to make a difference. Because if everyone's so close on speed, you know, what kind of package is going to generate slingshots and constant back and forth? I don't know. We see it with super speedways, but, of course, that's drafting. That's a completely different style of racing that we only see at three different racetracks. But everywhere else, you know, I think that, you know, everyone's just so equal, and that's why it's tough to pass on intermediate tracks, and that's why it's tough to pass on some of the short tracks, because, you know, a car that is in first versus a car that's in 20th is only about a tenth or two off, if that. So that's why track position is so important. You know, Mike made the point of how the Hendrick cars didn't have very good strategy, and they got mired midfield, and they couldn't make their way back to the front, and that's because they didn't have track position. And with everyone being so close on speed, like I keep mentioning, they just couldn't get back there. Hence why Priest and somebody else got up front, they were able to maintain that track position. So it's really become a matter of playing the pit strategy right and getting yourself up toward the front and being good at restarts. And if you can settle out from a restart somewhere near the front of the field, you can run there and stay there. So I don't know. I like horsepower and would love to see more horsepower, but I don't know if that's really the answer. And I'm not really sure if tweaking the aero package is really the answer. I think as long as the cars remain as close as they are, I just think that we're in a day and age where we just aren't going to see the kind of passing we did back in the day. Just there's so many factors that have changed between now and then.
Yeah, and in Mike's defense, I'm going to just kind of mention, too, a lot of the negative comments came after practice. And after they were in the race, some of the people who said negative things during the practice kind of changed their story after the race. So that's part of it, too. And I wanted to also just kind of point out that Phoenix is kind of a different track. I brought it up a few minutes ago. It's not the same as most short tracks that we go to. It's a very fast short track. It doesn't have any banking. It's a flat short track. It's on concrete. It's not an asphalt track. But it makes it very unique to race. It doesn't race the same as it does in the spring, in the fall. So there's a lot of things. It makes it very tricky for NASCAR to come up with the right package. What they did this weekend is they made some tweaks to it. The drivers tested it, and I know that Adam Stevens and them said they probably got a little bit of a leg up on everybody because they were part of that testing of that track and with that downforce package. But he also said in his post-race comments that it's a matter of time before everybody catches up with them and then they lose that advantage. But I wanted to read this particular statement. He was asked, how much did you feel like you could make moves and move around in the traffic? Last fall, you got stuck behind the 17. Today, you were able to make moves. This is what Adam Stevens said. Yeah, that's a good question. One data point, that's the one we have. We'll talk about it for sure, but we had a good car. when we were tight at the start, we weren't going forward. We barely held our ground. And when we got the balance close, he was able to make moves and get up there. I think, if anything, you would say that there was an improvement there. You have to ask some of the other competitors, really, to get a better feel for that. But I thought when we had a run, we could get close, closer than we could, and we could make a move. The other thing I liked was the tire and the track conditions and the reduced downforce. Overall, kind of widened the reduced downforce overall kind of widened the track a little bit. You could run too wide on both ends of the track. You could pass high if you had to, pass low if you needed to, and it was just overall racier, I would say. Now, that was from Adam Stevens. Now, keep in mind, he was the winning crew chief. So I thought it was interesting that he said it was the reduced downforce that widened the racetrack, making it easier to pass, giving them the chance to pass. And so I think that was very enlightening to me to read that from him. I had other people say that it wasn't just the aero package that was changed this weekend. They also had a different tire there this weekend, and they feel like that. Some people felt that the tire made a difference. Some people felt that they couldn't get grip with the tire. So there was a little, and some people felt that it was a little more slippery. Some drivers like that slippery feel. Some drivers don't. And I think that's maybe what made the difference in some of the comments that were being made by some of those drivers. And they attributed it maybe to the downforce package or to the aero package, but maybe it was the tire. And so I think we have to kind of take all of those things into account when we're looking at what happened at Phoenix. Some people saw that race and felt that there was, I think the real question, let me question that people need to ask, is what was Toyota doing that the other teams were not doing? And when I look at the race results, I had it up here a little bit ago when we were talking about the race finishes. When you look at how that race finished out in the Cup Series, there were a lot of Fords up in the top 10 as well. And I thought that, let me look at the race results here again. Toyota had something figured out because the Toyotas were running really well most of the race. But when you look at it, Chris Buescher's a Ford, Ty Gibbs a Toyota, Brad Keselowski Ford, Ryan Blaney Ford. The only Chevrolet in the top 10 was Ross Chastain. Then you had the Toyota of Martin Truex, who was one of the people who were complaining, but he was able to work his way through the field and get a top number 7 finish. Then you had Michael McDowell a Ford, Chase Briscoe a Ford, Tyler Reddick a Toyota. Those are your top 10s. But he was followed by Denny Hamlin in a Toyota, Noah Gregson in a Ford. Daniel Suarez was the next Chevrolet, and then you start seeing a few Chevrolets there. But here's the thing. Ford and Toyota figured something out that Chevrolet didn't figure out. That's what I think it comes down to. If you were a fan of the Chevrolets, you hated the downforce package. You hated the aero package. If you were a fan of Fords and Toyotas, you were happy the results were, and with that down with that aero package. Some people were saying that Stewart Haas Racing still has a long way to go, but if you listen to the interview from Chase Briscoe, they felt like they got a morale boost this weekend, and that the fact that Chase Briscoe had that ninth place finish and Noah Gregson had a 12th place finish, they felt that they were moving in the right direction. And they thought that there were good things going on there. So I think that you got to look at the bigger picture. You can't I think so many people got so focused, and this was pointed out today on Sirius XM radio as well. I think people had such high expectations of what that aero package was going to do this weekend that when they didn't get a three-wide finish or they didn't get a real close finish and they had that long green flag run, they thought that it wasn't good. But the racing was really good. We saw Christopher Bell come from the back and move up to the front to win that race. Denny Hamlin did it a couple of times. Martin Truex raced through the field. Ross Chastain, and he's in a Chevrolet, he raced through the field to get a sixth-place finish. So there was plenty of passing, and it wasn't just the moving just an inch or two in front. These guys raced through the field in order to get the finishes that they got, and they did well doing that. I think the real question is, what did Toyota figure out and Ford figure out that gave them those good finishes? Chevrolet didn't have it figured out. So they've got to go back to the drawing board, and they've got to figure that out. But the racing, I felt, was there, and it was exciting to watch. Yeah, there was a green flag run there, but not every race, and most races that we watch at Phoenix are kind of like that. I think that Phoenix was the Phoenix race that we usually see, and some of the drivers even referenced the fact that they felt that the racetrack was getting to be like the old Phoenix racetrack since they reconfigured all of that. They felt that some of that was coming back. They felt the tire made the difference. So I think that there's more factors to look at than just the aero package. Most of the people, and I documented a lot of comments because I was looking for the negative comments after the race about the package, and I had a hard time finding anybody who said that that package didn't work at Phoenix in the race. Some people said that they thought it was better, including Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin's comment after the race is he felt that the package did make the racing better, but he felt that there was still some more work to do. And I wouldn't deny that. Maybe there is some more work to do. But overall, I thought the comments after the race were quite positive and in favor of the aero package, even though they felt like maybe there was a little more work to do. And Josh on X said, nobody hates NASCAR more than NASCAR fans sometimes. They beg for old school comers and goers, green flag runs. They get playing some more. Pete Pistone, and I put that up on our page, he had a comment too, and I have to agree with him. At least to some extent, he said NASCAR has moved into the impossibly untenable world where if it's not three wide for 3 hours, the race is deemed a failure. Unless, of course, it's on a super speedway, that then nobody likes that either. So NASCAR seems to be in a no-win situation. But I thought that the drivers overall, and let me tell you, I looked for comments after the race where they said negative things about the aero package, and I couldn't find it. So, Jay, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, I'm going to take a deep breath and try and read some of the Mike's comments first. I know he put up Tyler Reddick says car left exponentially worse. But again, that was, as you said, Sharon, from the practice session. So then Mike said, based on driver feedback following practice, it's pretty clear all the work that NASCAR did trying to revise the aero package was a waste of time and hasn't produced desired results. Daniel Suarez did say the car is very bad in traffic, probably even worse. On a positive note, it seems that the tire seems to fall off a little bit quicker than before. So that comes back to what you said about tires. Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, William Byron. I'm not going to play that video, so back out of that one. Then it was Jeff Gluck who said Chase Elliott after practice said he felt so little difference with the package. He forgot NASCAR made any changes until they were talking about it after the session. So then Mike's comment, the feedback is overwhelmingly and seems to be unanimously negative. That was three, maybe four drivers out of 35. I don't know where he had learned his math. Looking at, I know he likes to use Jeff Gluck's poll from the fans' perspective, or drivers can vote too, I guess. Was Phoenix a good race? 40% said yes, 60% said no. That is almost 50-50. That is not overwhelmingly negative.
Correct.
So I'm with Sharon of there's always room for improvement, and NASCAR is trying different things. But I think it has to do with the tire, and I think it still has more to do with the aero package. And I say from the front end, and I am not an engineer, so I may be way off, but from the front end, do all of the drivers say it's tougher to drive back when you're in traffic? Yes. However, as Sharon pointed out, there were drivers that did it, to include your race winner, Christopher Bell. And I know, Sharon, you said that it was outside the top 10. I thought it was right at 10th, but he started from or further back on that restart, as did Ty Gibbs, who worked his way back in. When we look at Charlotte, especially during the 600, they talk about that of keeping up with the track, making the right adjustments. I mean, any race, you got guaranteed two pit stops if you were to happen to go caution-free through the two stages, two stops to make adjustments to your car. And I want to read Mike's other comments. Well, we got two long ones here. Oh, darn it. All right. Another deep breath. Well, that race played out pretty much as expected. Nobody could pass. Yes, before Jay Hoosman says, but people did make passes. I'm aware of that, but by and large, better cars were trapped behind slower cars. If you lost track position, it was gone forever. Elliott and Byron got stuck in the high teens to low 20s, could never recover after running well inside the top 10 most of the day. Hamlin couldn't crack into the top 10 after dominating the middle part of the race. Truex and Priest had no trouble staying out in the top five, despite having tires that were 30 laps older than the cars around them. Gibbs was able to hold on to P2, which was the effective lead since Truex had to pit, for a long time, despite only being on two tires, and ended up position three, despite nearly all the cars behind him being on four tires. And that's where you put up of Pete Pistone's comments, and he responded to that. That argument, and I feel like it's a deflection on Pistone's part. Did the 9, 11, and 24 suddenly suck after running comfortably inside the top 10 all day? Or the 19 and 41 suddenly diamonds in the rough after gaining track position on pit strategy and not recovering near at all after pitting? Said, I'm not buying it. I'm not a fan of the sorry you didn't like it excuse being made to fans who are pointing out pretty glaring issues that were demonstrated yesterday and backed up by comments during the race from Truex, Wallace, and others that indicated it was difficult, if not impossible, for most cars to make the complete pass. I'm also aware of the passing data being floated around as some kind of defense of this race. Getting a nose in front of somebody passing a scoring loop and falling back behind somebody by the next loop is counted as a pass, despite no such pass taking place. That data is pretty bunk, in my opinion.
Yeah, all right, now I gotta that's interesting.
Take a breath and gather my own thoughts.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jen.
No, I was going to say, he made that comment on the guy who posted the green flag passes. I saw that earlier. And the guy said, doesn't matter. Those stats are based on the same parameters. So it was the same kind of passing back in 2010 as it is now. The same stats comparing the same information, we had more passing. So he didn't buy Mike's defense either.
And that's where I kind of fall in, and I'm on that side of, for one, I don't think you're ever going to make fans happy. And this is where Sharon and I had this conversation earlier. You go back to the good old days. There were drivers winning by three or four laps. I mean, how is that better? I don't grasp that. Go back to when we had the horsepower at one time, and I'm not even going to try and put a time frame to it because been a fan for a while, but Ford's had a better horsepower advantage. So NASCAR gave Collar a spoiler and something else more on the front valance before they had the, I drew a blank, what is the splitter. Used to be that front valance, so they gave them an extra half inch there and then a half inch on their spoiler. Well, then Chevy or whoever they gave it to, they have an aero advantage. I mean, fans were never happy. So that to me is the fans just aren't happy because their driver, their manufacturer, their team didn't win. Saw what happened, like I said, Christopher Bell came through the field. Toyota's figured it out. Did the 9, 11, and 24 suddenly not be so well? Clearly, not 100%. I understand they're back in traffic, but if you don't adjust your car and keep up with the track and where you're at, a lot of the teams talk about that. That's why you want to not have that problem. Don't get stuck back there, but you have to adjust the car. It's difficult when you are out front as the race leader, and that's where I go back to, I think there's aero-wise something that can be done to prevent that front run in the completely clean air to having that issue if you're running behind other cars. And I don't care what you do to a car or how much horsepower you have, that's not going to change. That's been that way no matter what type of car, what had what. And to wrap up this first round anyway, go back to what Andy said to me is common sense. Okay, it's a horsepower problem. You're back there in dirty air. Let's give everybody 750 horsepower. Everybody got that same advantage of 200 more horsepower. What's the gain there? Now you're just going faster, but you still can't pass or catch the guy in front of you. That hasn't changed anything. I believe it's still in some part of the aero, and I say front end, but again, I'm not an engineer, might be wrong, and with the tires, which were talked about specifically.
Yeah, and to go back to Mike's comment to the post, Josh Hamilton posted the stats about the green flag passes. Today's race had 2,813 green flag passes, the highest total of any next-gen race at Phoenix Raceway. March 24 was that stat, the 2,813. November 23 was at 2,201. March 23 of last year was 2,584. November of 22, it was at 20,065. And March of 22 is at 20,058. Mike's comment to him was, I don't doubt the veracity of this stat, but it's very often presented in a misleading way. Drivers exchanging position is counted as a pass each time it happens. Just an example of how this can be misleading. Josh Hamilton came back and said, doesn't matter how it's calculated, it's being compared to other numbers calculated the same way. So I think that's a valid point. If they're being calculated in the same way, there was more of the back and forth than any other race in the last 2 or 3 years. So it tells me that that package did its job. Andy, it's your turn to comment, though. Let's hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I guess, you know, my follow-up here, I want to talk on a couple of things that Jay brought up, which actually does make sense. We've been hearing for years and years, probably since the beginning of time, or at least in the last 20 years, but aero tight, right? Losing the nose when you get close to a car. That goes into the front downforce of a race car, and it's not just this new cup car. It goes back to, you know, at least as far as I've been watching, which is the early 2000s, when engineering really started to play a role and teams to figure out how to put more and more downforce into the front end of the race car, which makes it go faster, but it also makes it more sensitive in traffic. So I think Jay brings up a really good point of the front end downforce. If you can reduce that by a lot, you know, maybe you won't have the aero issues that create issues with passing. You know, and then with the tire situation, I think that's also a good point, too. If the tire gives up more and wears more, you know, someone that stays out on 30-lap tires isn't going to be able to maintain track position at the front of the field. So you know, those are my thoughts. I don't know if that's the exact fix or what the right answer is. But I do think that, you know, to the point of everybody being as close as they've ever been as far as parity goes, that plays into it too, because if everyone's running identical speeds and lap times, you're going to be stuck where you're stuck in the field unless you've got a really, really good race car. So I guess that's where teams need to figure out how to be, you know, incredible. Like Christopher Bell was, their team had the setup figured out to where they could make their way to the front. You know, but he was one of only a few that I saw that could do it. I have mixed emotions on the race personally. I didn't think it was a terrible race. I didn't think it was a great race. It was kind of somewhere in the middle. I do think there was room for improvement if they want to promote better racing, but they're trying, right? NASCAR is actually putting in an effort to make changes to try to make the racing better. I don't think they're there yet, but they're at least making an effort. I'll give them an A for that. And hopefully we see continued improvements in the future. But I do think the two big points for me would be eliminating front-end downforce and then, you know, making the tire wear more. And maybe then, you know, you'll see some kind of an improvement.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point too, Andy, on the parity of the cars. I think that there is a lot of parity in the cars. But I do think that you had two manufacturers that figured it out better than one manufacturer. And the fans of that manufacturer probably aren't going to be happy. Neither will the drivers be happy. But most of the drivers that I read comments from after the race recognized that they had work to do and that they needed to go back to the drawing board and do the work that they needed to do to catch up with where the Toyotas and the Fords were in this particular race. The only one that seems to have done it was Ross Chastain. And on the Chevrolet side, he was the only one in the top 10 there. But I do think that there were some very good points made. If you read the transcript from the crew chief and from the drivers, one thing, and even from Denny Hamlin said he recognized that if he was going to win a championship, that he was going to have to be better at racing at Phoenix, because that's where the championship race is. And so they went to work on their Toyota program and as an organization. And he did race from the back. He finished 11th. No, he didn't break the top 10, but he came from the back and he got to 11th place. I think that that shows that he was able to pass. I think that they put a concerted effort into the package at Phoenix this year, and it shows in the performance of the Toyota drivers. I think Ford's been working on their package, and it showed this weekend. With regard to the first three races, it was Chevrolet at the top of the list. There's going to be a lot more races that are going to be in that vein than there are going to be races of the likes of Phoenix. Phoenix is a very unique racetrack, and it was brought up today on some of the shows that I listen to. Does NASCAR want to make Phoenix the track that they put out as their showcase for the championship? And this goes back to our first topic. Phoenix maybe isn't the best example to showcase as a NASCAR track and a NASCAR race, because it does take extra effort for these guys to figure out this track and to be able to race on it. And they don't have any other track on the schedule that is like Phoenix. To me, the race at Phoenix was what we have come to expect to see at Phoenix. It's not like any other racetrack that we race at. And that's why drivers don't usually put that much emphasis on doing what they do at that track. Maybe that's why Chevrolet didn't do as well at that track, because they didn't put that kind of emphasis on it, because they don't race any other track that's like Phoenix. So I do think that there's a lot of variables here that people just blindly glide over, and they don't take into it account. And although it might not make sense to everybody, it does make sense to a certain extent. I think that I'm not the only one saying these things. I'm repeating what I've heard today. These are other people that are saying these things as it relates to what's happening at the track. I'm simply repeating what I have heard. So I do think that there's some validity in what they have to say, though, and that's why I'm repeating what I'm hearing them say. And even the drivers, if you look at what the drivers said after the race, I think there is a big difference. In fact, Front Stretch has an article called What Drivers Said After Phoenix. That was actually NBC Sports. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick and go over what drivers actually said after the race. Okay, here's some examples. And I'm going to go to the negative ones first, or the ones that were perceived to be negative. Okay, here we go. Kyle Busch, who finished 22nd, crew chief Randall Burnett and all the guys in the zone team worked hard this weekend at Phoenix Raceway. They made a ton of changes from the practice session we had on Friday afternoon through the race. We made the car a little better about halfway through the race, but we still lacked grip, and we needed clean air to make the front end of the car rotate better. We'll bounce back and be better, but we have some work to do. I didn't see anything about the package. Justin Haley finished 24th. I thought it was a good day, another good day of learning. We had a little too much, a little too late, so we've just got to keep working on unloading better and getting the car to a decent place before the start of the race. But I feel like at the end, we were as competitive as anyone. I'm looking forward to a short track next week. Bristol is a lot of fun, and I think I can find a good starting place to make some more progress. John Hunter Nemechek finished 25th. He apologized to Joey Logano. I'm going to reach out to Joey and probably reach out to Paul Roof and Roger Penske. I guess I just misjudged it. I hit the brake pedal pretty hard, and it didn't really slow down, and I got into the back of them. It's my fault. I made a mistake, and I've got a lot to learn from it, and I own it. Josh Berry finished 26th. On days like today, I think you just take away more laps and experience on restarts and on pit road and all that stuff, but we definitely struggled today on some runs more than others. But just a lot to look at and learn from so that we can be better when we come back. Daniel Hemric, not the best day for us at Phoenix. We couldn't quite get the balance right. And that's what Adam Stevens talked about. He said, it's in the balance of the car. When we got the balance right, we could make moves. And I think that's where a lot of this is as well. When we get the balance right on our 31 Poppy Bank Chevrolet, then we put ourselves in a little bit of a hole with a loose wheel, and we couldn't get a bounce back from that. We'll learn from today and hopefully come back stronger in the fall. Again, none of these guys are saying it was the aero package. I just didn't have any pace. Unfortunately, it felt like by the end of the race, we got the balance pretty decent, but we were nowhere near where we needed to be to start, which put us further behind. We'll go back to the shop and take a look at it. Our RFK friends had a pretty good day, so we can dig in and see what they had and if that can help us. Eric Jones, the Family Dollar Toyota Camry was not bad, but got back in the pack and kind of flipped around on the same strategy and got taken out of it. Just an unfortunate ending. I won't get into what Austin Dillon, that guy has had no luck at Phoenix. But the thing is, and I'm not going to read all of them because it's just pointless. None of those guys had anything to say about the package. They recognized that they didn't have the car that they needed to have, and they knew that they had work to do. So And I think a lot of it does have to do with the balance. And that was the point that I was going to make about Adam Stevens' post-race comments. He said it was all in the balance. When the balance was right, they were able to make moves. When they didn't have the balance, it was harder to make those moves. So I think there's a bigger picture here than just the aero package. Jay?
You got anything else you want to say before I start sharing?
Oh, maybe I should. We're coming up to that time of the night where first-time listeners, we just want to let you know we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. And I do think I didn't want anybody to be caught off guard hearing us go off air in mid-sentence. We do record the rest of the conversation when we go off air at exactly 10:30 p.m., and that becomes part of our overtime bonus material that's available on the podcast. When we're done with the show tonight, I will go out and let people know that the podcast is now available. And at that point, you can go to the player at fanforacing.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. And you can do that at your convenience. So you can hear the rest of what we had to say here tonight. So again, that gives you what you need to know. And we'll go ahead and go on to Jay's comments.
The fact that Mike, and maybe we can revisit this when he's here to actually discuss it from his vantage point, because we always do like to hear, you know, that's the other side of it. But saying that using the passing loop data, that it's being, and I'm trying to think of the word he used, overinflated or tried to direct in one direction. He used four drivers' comments to say, yeah, misleading. There we go. He likes to use that word. He used four drivers' comments to say it's unanimous. So who's misleading who? You mentioned it, of there were teams that did figure it out. When you look at it, this aero package was tested, which was with a limited number of cars and teams, and I don't remember who they all were. Some of them said they felt like they got an advantage from it, but it's like six cars, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere normally in that neighborhood. Small sample. We had a practice session. Not all the cars go out there at the same time. Teams are trying different things. We've had one race. What kind of sample is that to determine then if this has worked or not, good or not, or whatever? You want to talk about it after we've had multiple short track races, multiple at the same track, and see if teams have found what they need to do to work on that balance or setup to coincide with what this aero package is. And these teams are going to do it, some quicker and faster than others. Toyota has a huge jump start because they obviously found what worked or were more on point or closer to it than the other teams. Ford's, as Sharon mentioned, seemed to have at least figured it out during the race. Chevy did not appear to do so. I mean, that becomes then of the teams need to work on it. They always want to talk about that. We want to find gray areas or whatever we can work in to improve on. Work on the area within that, what's there. This is the hand you've been dealt. Play it. And some of them did. They turned it into a winning hand. And Sharon, you said you listened to part of this, so I don't want to say which one said which, but I thought it was between Bagley and Pistone when they were talking about it. Said, was this a memorable race, most memorable race you're going to remember in a year or two or whatever? No. Out of last year's 36 races, how many of them do you remember and stand out? Okay, we had, now I don't remember if that was last year. Was last year the Hail Melon move, or was that the year before? Okay. So, yes, that race stands out. Ricky Craven and Kurt Busch at Darlington from years back, that one stands out. How many races out of a 36-year, just from last year, go back 1 year, stand out to you as spectacular unless something spectacular happened? This was a good race, nothing spectacular. It wasn't a three-wide finish. Sharon mentioned that. It wasn't two guys beaten door-to-door. Martin Truex, you remember the Charlotte race, he led 492 out of 500 laps. Okay, you remember that. That was pure dominance. But other than that, week in and week out, how many of those races do you remember specifically that were just good races, but there wasn't that spectacular moment? You know, so again, was this superb, great finish or something spectacular? No. I'll bet Kyle, not Kyle, Christopher Bell remembers it. You know, I mean, he would want it. Maybe Martin Truex remembers it because they may have given it away in their pit strategy. But aside from that, but what you can't ask for that, as Pisoni's tweet says, you can't ask for that every race, every lap of every race. You're just not going to get it no matter what you got.
Okay, we'll let that be the last word there. Andy, what's our next hot topic?
The Xfinity Series caution that came out when Haley Deegan brushed the wall.
Okay. Jay, your thoughts about that caution?
I'm going to let somebody else read Mike's comments on this one. Okay. This is one of those, again, I put my faith in NASCAR. I don't see it as a huge issue. Could they have thrown the caution? Maybe. Was it necessary? Maybe not. I've seen it go both ways. There again, it seems to me of whether or not it was your favorite driver or whatever that was affected. I struggle with this, and I don't want to go real in-depth to it, but the fans just waver from one week to another whether or not, from my viewpoint, it's whether or not their driver or team was the one that benefited from it.
Okay. I guess I'll read the comments from Mike. This is NASCAR fans question the late caution after Haley Deegan barely touches the wall at Phoenix. I find this article misleading because it implies that there was any kind of question whether this caution was legit or not. It was clearly a BS caution that was used to bunch the field back up. It directly led to a massive pileup on the ensuing restart, and the race still, in capital letters, was boring after the next restart. If not for a blown tire, Allgaier would have run away with a 5-plus-second margin of victory and nobody even close. It's even more BS when you remember that NASCAR didn't throw a caution when Byron and McDowell flat-out wrecked getting to pit road at Atlanta a few weeks ago. Cars were stopped broadside to traffic, and NASCAR still didn't throw a caution then. The root cause, I love that. The root cause is that Phoenix just sucks. It absolutely doesn't deserve two dates, especially when the second date is what should be the most important date of the schedule behind maybe the Daytona 500. Okay. You know, sometimes this is really hard because sometimes I feel like I'm going to say something I'm really going to regret later. But sometimes when fans complain all the time about everything, it starts to get to be like the adults in Charlie Brown's comic strip. Yeah, 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 yeah. You know, bop, 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 bop. It gets to the point that I don't even want to hear it anymore. It really does. Because maybe it's legit. I don't know. But NASCAR is the sanctioning body. I don't think that they're purposely out there trying to create BS cautions. I don't think that they're trying to do anything negative to the sport. Why would they? Why would they do something that is negative to the sport? This is their business. They're going to do what they need to do, and they have their reason. I don't know what the reason is because I didn't really put that much attention to it at the time. I think people get to the point that they nitpick at a lot of things, and it takes away from the racing product. that's what takes away from the racing product for me, is hearing fans complain about every little thing. And I don't know what they're enjoying about the sport anymore, because they're just complaining about every little thing. Why are you watching it if it's that bad? Don't watch, because I don't want to hear your complaints anymore. And that's just the way I feel about it. I think NASCAR is going to do what they need to do for their sport, and I don't think that they're doing anything negative to make it a gimmick or BS or anything else. I just get tired of hearing it, and I'm sorry, but that's where I'm at. Andy, what do you have to say?
I don't know if I dare go.
Well, I'm just tired of it, that's all. Go ahead. You're entitled to your opinion, Andy.
No, I'm kidding. I'm only kidding. I do agree with you. In fact, I sometimes wonder, if something's that frustrating week after week, why bother, right? It's supposed to be a hobby. No one's making any of us do this. So I get your point. I totally get it. This particular caution, I was perplexed. I'm not going to lie. I was watching this race by myself. Normally, Mike and I will chit-chat back and forth. He and I did not talk during this race. I actually watched it on a recording just prior to the Cup race yesterday. So I was watching this race, and it was pretty strung out, and it was pretty routine, and I knew that there was a big wreck late in the race, but I didn't know much about it. And so I was kind of waiting, to see what took place there. And then the caution came out for Deegan. She got up and kind of got, I don't even know if she hit the wall. She got up in the high groove, and they immediately threw the caution. And I will say, my first thought was, why'd they throw the yellow for that? It really was perplexing. And then, of course, there was the restart, which led to the wreck between John Hunter and Chandler Smith. And I think Riley Herbst. That's just part of racing, right? I mean, sometimes, I think most of the time, they get the caution calls correct. Sometimes they don't, and that's just part of it, because it's humans making these decisions. We're all prone to making a mistake here and there. I guess I'd probably rather them err on the side of safety versus not throwing a caution and having somebody get hurt. So I can't really be mad about that. I'm not running the race. They are. Do they always get it right? No, but it's always easy for us to Monday morning quarterback it, and it's always easy for us to say what they could have, would have, should have done sitting on a couch. So I'm not going to be critical of the call, but I did question it. I'll admit that. But I can't really sit here and be overly critical of it, because I don't call NASCAR races. If I did that, it would be a clown show probably. So, and as far as the wreck goes, I mean, that's part of racing, right? Cautions come out, it bunches the field back up, they go back racing, and stuff happens sometimes. I don't think that, Deegan's incident directly caused the big wreck. That was drivers that got together on an ensuing restart, but that happens all the time. So I don't know. I mean, like I said, most of the time they get it right. Every now and then there's a questionable caution in there. It's just the human element of it, and it is what it is. It's part of it, and, I think that we've seen it year after year after year. We'll see it again, but I don't think it ruined the race or anything like that.
Okay, Jay.
Well, I'm going to try and give a little bit of insight and feedback. I'm not race director or controlling that when it comes to the dirt track I work at. I have been in the flag stands a total, I think, 3 times. One of those, while I was flagging, yes, I did not wait for a call. I threw the yellow on my own because I felt there was a safety issue. Guy got turned around and kept going. Look back on it, yeah, didn't need to be thrown. My bad. I, as Andy put it, I erred on the side of safety. I saw that car go around, looked like he backed it into the wall. Apparently didn't, as he came off and got going again. I had already thrown the yellow. Okay? That, again, you make that split-second judgment call from the race director side. If what Mike is saying here, that it was done to bunch up the field, and create a ruckus because it was a otherwise boring race to him. Let me put that into perspective. And in NASCAR, you have much more people than we have three, maybe four in the booth. You're saying they're standing up in the booth saying, man, this race has been strung out. Somebody's dominating. Let's just throw a caution and see if we can wreck a bunch of race cars that we don't have to pay for the entertainment of these fans. You're saying, by saying they intentionally threw that caution to bunch up the field and create that, that was their thought process. This hasn't been exciting enough. Let's cause a demo derby. Nobody in their right mind has that thought. I mean, that's just ludicrous, in my opinion. Even if a driver is dominating a race, no race director is going to say, man, this guy's kicking everybody's butt. We can't let him win by that much. With three to go, let's throw a caution. He's still going to win. He's going to pull away, but it'll only be by four or five car lengths rather than half the track. Let's do that. Tell me that's a logical thought process for anybody. That just doesn't happen. Now, like you said, take this in, and I watched the race. I wish I still had it on recording so I could go back and watch it again. I'm like Sharon. I was like, yeah, I saw the caution and it came out. I didn't think nothing about, well, did that really deserve? To me, somebody at that point is watching to see, hey, can I find a spot where I can point out that I think NASCAR made a mistake because they need to be 100% perfect all of the time. Check yourself. I mean, come on now. Most of the time, if they do, they have admitted it and said, we will work on this. Or, you know, how quickly the caution comes out. Most of the time, it's always a, well, the wreck already happened. Why didn't you throw the caution earlier? That was one where they admitted. They said, hey, there was some delay between us and the flagman and communication process or whatever. They admitted that. They said they would work on it. I don't know that. I think maybe one where the caution light came on, maybe that's the one I'm thinking of, when they didn't really want a caution, but the light came on, but the flag didn't come out, so there's confusion. They took ownership of it. They've made adjustments to try and make sure it doesn't happen again. But to say that they're making a conscious decision to try and determine the outcome of a race, even going back to the days of Dale Earnhardt Jr. or whoever, don't see a sanctioning body or a race control saying, I don't want this guy to win, or we need to make sure this person wins. Let's do whatever we got to do to make it happen. I just don't see that.
I have to agree with you. I don't see it either. And I've got to wonder if the people that are thinking these things, I know that they've made mistakes in their life. Why are they so unforgiving when there's a human error with NASCAR? I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. Why? Why would you make that a big issue if somebody made a mistake? I don't know. And I would rather see them, like you guys have both said, I would rather see them make a mistake and it be on the side of safety than to not call the caution and then somebody gets hurt. I have more faith in NASCAR than these people do, because I just don't feel that NASCAR would purposely do that. I'm like Jay. I can't see them sitting up in a booth and saying, let's spice this up a little bit, and first chance we get, we're going to call a caution. And without thinking about it, we're just going to call it. People don't think that way up in the booth. I really can't see that happening. And why would they? Why would they do that? I just don't think it makes sense. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I do believe everybody's entitled to their opinion. I know people don't always agree with me. Sometimes they think I don't make sense. But this just doesn't make sense to me. And I'm just going to leave it at that. And just say you're entitled to your opinion doesn't mean I have to agree with it. Andy?
Yeah, I don't really have any follow-up to this one, honestly. I mean, it happened, you know, and the race continued, and, you know, that's that. I mean, there's really nothing you could really say about it. I mean, other than, the judgment call was made. Typically when somebody goes up and almost hits the wall, it's because they cut a tire, and that usually means there could be debris on the track. So I can only guess that that's the thought process that was going through the head, you know, whoever was in charge of making that decision. So I don't know, you know, like I said, sometimes, most of the time, really, they get it right, you know, and every now and then, you know, something might happen where you're like, man, why'd they do that? But, I mean, again, that's the human element of it, and I think the fact that they generally did it right speaks volumes to how good of a job they typically do. So, I hate to see the wreck that happened after the restart, but that's on the drivers that caused the wreck. That's not on NASCAR. They didn't cause the wreck, so it's like you can't really get mad at them for that. That's on the guys. That's on the guys driving the steering wheels, you know, driving the car. So, you know, it happens. It's just part of it sometimes. It's just the way some of these races go, and you move on from it.
Exactly. Okay, Jay, do we have time for one more quick one, or do we have any more?
Well, I don't think we have any on our board. Let me double-check there, shut that down. I don't know that we had any pop-up as far as that. So if we had time, I wanted to throw something out there for the wrap-up, and I want to try and give credit, but I don't know where it came from, whether it's Race Hub on Fox or on one of the radio shows on SiriusXM. They call it Contender Pretender. Go around real quick here, and some that have either had a good start to the season, whether or not we think that'll continue and they'll be a contender, or if they've had a good start, you think they're going to be a pretender. I don't know if either one of you have ever heard this portion they do. And I say I can't off the top of my head think of which program it comes from. But
okay, Andy, who's your contenders? Who is your pretenders?
I have to put a list in front of me to really say it. Gosh, I don't know. It's hard for me to really say. I'm sorry, go ahead, Jay.
I was going to say, I'll just start with an example, two off the top of my head that we've talked about, and I did the article, Front Row Motorsports and Spire Motorsports, because they both kind of had good starts, and now we're four or five races in.
Okay. Does that help, Andy?
Yeah, I see what you mean there. God, it's really hard for me to really put any names and teams on it here, but I think it's still pretty early in the season as far as trying to make, you know, any kind of judgment call, you know, as far as who's good and who's not. I mean, we're four races in. We've been to different types of racetracks. I think that when you get probably somewhere toward April and May, well into the season, I think that's a good time to really say who's going to be good and who's not. But if, you know, to your examples of Spire Motorsports and Front Row Motorsports, I mean, they've both improved a lot. They seem to be doing well. So I don't know. They seem like they're for real. Are they going to go out and win five races this year? No, probably not. But I think that they are contenders, and they definitely have been running well consistently with at least one of their cars week after week.
Yeah, I'm with Andy. I think this is kind of really tough to do because four races is hard to make a judgment because we just haven't really gotten to the season yet. And with Phoenix being so different from any